Lou Manfredini here. Do you have cracked or sunken concrete areas around your home? Call PermaSeal for a free estimate. Don't replace it, raise it. Call 800-421-7325 or visit permaseal.net.
Chwani, do you miss us?
Oh, so very much.
Are you able to get through the morning without both Andy and I in the physical building?
Yeah, we'll make it.
Are you sure?
Andy, yeah, I think so.
Andy and I are at 2501 West Bradley Place, nowhere near the freaking marathon, as I like to now call it.
The FM, well, it got underway right on schedule, and I've been looking out the WGN newsroom window here, looking north on Columbus. And,
hordes of people.
Oh, man. Yes, quite a sight to
hordes
see.
Hordes of sweaty people. Who wouldn't want to see that?
I can't see anybody sweating from 18 floors up, but
I think we can
a lot
assume.
Of people running, you bet.
I think we know from our many years on Michigan Avenue, when the studio used to be in that old dump Tribune Tower, how sweaty people are.
Yes, that's for sure.
Before, after, and during the actual event. And why wouldn't they be? They're running 26 point whatever it is miles. Of course you'd be sweaty.
Well, they're just getting started, and it's 53 degrees along the lakefront here, so it may take a while for them to work up a sweat.
I'm sweating at just talking about it.
Would you have the heat cranked up in there, do you?
I don't, but Andy does.
Andy does.
Oh, I'm in the traffic bunker, and it's like 79 degrees in here.
Oh, that sounds great.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
I think it's fine.
I think it's horrible.
Whereas I am at my appointed post. This is where, when I do Bob Surratt show in the morning, I do it here from the TV station, of course.
So you're not in the same room?
No.
No.
Bob, Andy's down the hall.
Okay.
And apparently in the boiler room.
In the boiler room. I have no idea how to crank the heat down.
I don't even know if we have a boiler in this building or not. But whatever is the hottest room in the building, that's where Andy is.
I found it, yes.
Yeah. But all those years when we used to do the show in the window and we'd see the people, you know, beforehand and especially afterwards when they come by with the aluminum foil wrapped around them. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Those aluminum, not blankets exactly, but I guess to insulate the...
A covering of sorts.
Their body heat. Yeah, mm-hmm. They're a sweaty mess.
They have quite a few of them walking by with that, too, as I recall.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Andy and I are nowhere near any of that today.
Correct.
We decided that we put up with it. I don't know why it took us so many years to figure out that we could actually do the show and not be right in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get in the building?
Yeah, how'd it go?
Did you get there so early that
I was here at 3:45 this morning and drove right on in. Actually, you obviously can't get up Columbus Drive, but Michigan Avenue to Randolph and then Lower Randolph to Lower Columbus and into the building.
Will you be able to get out?
Yes, yes. I've been looking at that all morning. As a matter of fact, I've been checking schedules all week, and it looks like I should be able to. Traffic will be tough downtown, but I do think I can get out with not much of a problem.
First world problems we have.
Big time, yeah.
Some people have actual problems. We're like... Andy's concerned with, ooh, it's so warm in here.
Yeah, it's warm. But yeah, I know that doesn't, you know, amount to a hill of beans with a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah, people right now are, boo-hoo. boo-hoo, they have to go talk on the radio for a few hours. Ooh, boo-hoo.
It's true.
Yeah, I have to, I just have to add this also, though. Once again, I was not invited to join you at 2501 West Bradley Place.
Well, I checked into that, actually, and it's not that you weren't invited. You didn't pass security clearance.
Oh, I see.
We do a full background check on everybody that comes in and out of this building, and I don't know, something in your have you ever been arrested?
No.
Did you ever try to bring something illegal back into the country?
No, and no.
Did those pictures surface?
Oh, don't start on the pictures.
I love that Eli
knows
that.
Don't start.
I love that people know I have black.
Now, Eli made it in. Eli and Engineer Bob, Jess, our producer, they're here.
You're all very conscientious.
They're here.
There's no question that Andy and I are lazy.
Correct.
I don't think we're trying to deny that in any way.
I'm not.
Well, I don't know. There was, maybe it was those photos.
Could have been.
Something, I went to bat for you, and I said, can we get Schwani to come and join us at Bradley Place? They did a background check on all of us. Andy and I passed. And for some reason, there was a big red line through your picture.
Now, I need to check this out myself. A red line through my picture?
Yep.
Sure.
Yep.
Sure. Andy, is this true?
You know, I'm hearing it from the source, so yeah, it must be. I take him at his word.
I see. Just wait till tree time. Just wait.
Oh, I have tree time news, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
3 weeks, I think, from today?
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming up pretty soon. We'll share that. Why don't we get things going here? We have a few important messages, and then we will continue the Sunday morning show here on WGN. Maybe later on in the show, Andy and I could play the grand prize game.
Oh, I would love that.
The buckets are, actually, they're very close to where you are in the traffic department. Yeah, there's a storage area right there. So that would be fun to play grand prize game on the radio where you can't really see anything.
Yeah, that way I can tell you I got the number six.
Yeah, and get the Schwinn bike.
Nice. And the silver dollar.
Yeah. And in addition to Andy and I, being a stone's throw from Chicago TV history, Dave Schwann back at our WGN radio studios on Wacker Drive because he's got a newsroom to run.
That's right.
Somebody on our text line, I am able to access our text line from here. So please feel free to continue all your insane texts that you send. Every week. We've got some mean ones. We're like 15 minutes into the show, and we've already got some mean texts.
Oh, no.
We didn't even say anything mean yet.
No, not yet.
Yeah, you did.
What did I say?
You said I wasn't invited because I didn't pass security.
You didn't. You failed the... I'm just reporting the fact.
And now you're going to play the grand prize game. That's like telling me we're having a party, and you're not invited. Wow.
The problem with that is what?
It's accurate.
Dave Schwann back at our newsroom because you have, Andy and I can, we can just sit down anywhere and start talking. But, you need the vital services of the WGN newsroom, don't you?
Yes, I do. And Andy, you've got a big sports weekend here.
I
with
do.
Everything. So yeah. I hope you have everything you need.
Yeah, I have it all.
Anything happen with the Cubs last night?
No, nothing at all.
No.
Just another game.
Just another one of those games where they can't score any runs.
Sad.
Yeah, that's true, OB.
OB checking in.
Yeah, it was not fun. I was actually here last night, too, working with Chris Bowden on GN Sports, and it was so frustrating to watch this team all year. Well, actually, not all year. The second half was really their doom. They couldn't score any runs, and their pitchers were getting hurt, and they really could have used another starter in this series and probably the series before that, but Cade Horton got hurt, and Jed Hoyer didn't make any moves at the deadline. So I'm not sure what, they were there at smoke and mirrors, I think, to me already getting through that first series and then taking this one to the limit, which, was actually pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was impressed.
Yeah, but they weren't able to, they had an opportunity in the sixth inning. The first two men reached, they're in the middle of the order, and nothing happened. And they just could not, they couldn't even get a man to third base. The guys just, basically stood there. And it was so frustrating to watch. And it's a situation where we'll have to they have to regroup, go back to the old drawing board, so to speak, and try to figure out a plan for competition next season.
I mean, two things come to my mind. I mean, Milwaukee,
yep,
a pretty great baseball team, right?
Yeah, I mean, they had the best record in baseball.
Yeah, so if we're going to go down losing, we went down to a pretty amazing organization. Congratulations to them.
Yeah, congratulations to them.
Let's be good sports about it. It would have been nice if we could have advanced a little further. But You know, they won, and congratulations to them. And
now let's have the Dodgers beat them.
And, in the true spirit of a
exactly sports. Right. I'm a grouch when it comes to the Brewers. I don't know.
Are you really?
Well, I have family that is from Milwaukee, and in the old days when Milwaukee was in the American League, I was all good with it because they were, you know, they were harmless to me.
Yeah.
But they were only damaging to the White Sox, and you know, now that they're in the National League and the Cubs have been battling back and forth with them the last few years specifically, and now that the Cubs have the former Brewers manager Craig Counsell,
right,
and Craig Counsell's former head coach while he was playing at Notre Dame, Pat Murphy, is the new manager of the second year manager of the Brewers, and to watch that kind of take place last night was a little difficult to watch if you're a Cubs fan or a Craig Counsell fan,
yeah,
because he lost to his old organization, and I don't know, it's a nice rivalry, I get it, but you know, look, if the Cubs had beaten the Brewers, they'd be saying the same thing, go Dodgers,
right. Right, exactly.
So I'll say go Dodgers.
So we'll say go Dodgers, and
it won't matter. It won't matter at all.
I'm still going to go to Mars Cheese Castle, regardless.
That's good.
So
it's a good plan.
Yeah. The other. So my other question now is: does this mean that the Cubs are going to go and dust themselves off and rebuild and make some adjustments for next year? Do you think we're looking at a stronger Cubs team for next year now?
Well, there's a lot of question marks because the biggest question mark is probably going to be worth anywhere between 400 and 475 or so million. And that's Kyle Tucker, who they went out and got from the Astros as the season began. He did not have the type of season that he would have liked, and I'm sure that a lot of Cub fans would have liked to have seen. He was a little inconsistent, but he was hurt. And he, he's a free agent now. So there's going to be some big money teams coming after him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up somewhere else, to be honest with you, next year. But that does free up some cash to go out and get some other players and get some complimentary players that, there's some good ball players on this team right now that there were some holes. And there were holes at the beginning of the year that were never filled. And that's the biggest problem to me. That's the biggest disappointment. I mean, you have one of your top pitchers go out at the beginning of the year, Justin Steele, basically pitched the first month, and that was about it. And then Cade Horton goes down, your rookie that you bring up in the second half, toward the end of the second half, he goes down. So they've needed a pitcher for the last 2 years. They've needed another bat in the lineup. As far as I'm concerned, they can ship Ian Happ off somewhere that we don't have to deal with him anymore.
Ooh.
It was very disappointing, just very disappointing with the way some of these guys performed. And I know they're not trying to do that, and I'm being a little harsh just because it's the wound is still fresh.
You're being like uncharacteristically.
Yeah, I'm a little grumpy when it
harsh.
I'm a little grumpy when it comes to that to a couple players and just you expect a lot of and obviously I'm not saying I could go out there and do better because I can't. Otherwise, I'd have been doing it for a long time. But I don't know. You watch and it's history repeating itself every day when the front office doesn't go out and get you what you need.
Yeah. Schwann, you want to add anything to that?
Well,
your sports analysis.
I think everything Andy said is fine.
I'm sure a lot of people don't, but that's okay. Thank you.
You know, Andy's sleep deprived.
Conclusively.
He
was here last night.
Yep.
He was on Channel 9 last night. Now he's back, rise and shine.
Yeah, we got a doubleheader for me tomorrow, too.
He's sleep deprived today. But you're going to have another busy day tomorrow with the Monday Night Bears game, right?
Yeah, I'll be back.
Camp and OB, right?
I'll be on with Bob in the morning, and then I'll go home and sleep fast and come back to the station. We've got Camp and OB starting at 6, and then our post-game show from 11 till midnight 30. And then I'm going to stagger back to the microphone at about 6 a.m. on Tuesday. I'm going to make it happen.
I like to think you're going to be so loopy by then.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
That's going to be must listening. I like when people are grumpy and loopy.
Sleep deprived.
That's when the unpredictable radio happens.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't normally hear me going after guys. So that's part of the whole thing there. Yeah.
I know. I like a mean Andy. I enjoy a cranky.
Just a little edge every once in a while.
I enjoy a cranky Andy. Let me see here. Some text coming in. 773 says, I agree with Andy. No more Ian Happ.
Thank you.
Yep. 847, Andy is our hero. He was on Channel 9 after the Cubs game, and now he's on supporting Dean. Andy, did they let you go home?
They did. I had to fight through several layers of security to get out of here. But yes, they let me go. And surprisingly, they let me back.
Ask them if they know me.
Chwani, I wanted to get out of here. I don't want to be, you know, detained and just have them talk to me about you all day.
Shawnee's upset that he did not pass security clearance to get in. There's something hidden in Shawnee's past that we don't know about. That
I need to investigate this myself.
Well, up to you.
I did see your picture at the front desk.
Yeah, with the big red line through it.
I did see that as I was walking out last night.
Yeah. 815 area code. Why were the Cubs question mark? That's not really a sentence.
Why were the Cubs?
Why were the Cubs better swinging? The pitch is above their shoulders. Okay, that just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think what they're saying is the Cubs could not lay off high fastballs this entire series, and that was not fun to watch.
608 area code. If it was an 11 game series, the Cubs would have won.
You're probably right.
708 area code. Andy, spoken like a true diehard Cubs fan.
See, that's the problem.
There you go.
Sometimes it's hard to separate.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, good job for you. Good job for you. Oh, first of all, wait a minute. I got to read this. There's one other text that I want to read. Somebody said, thank you for congratulating the Brewers. You have a lot of listeners in Wisconsin.
Yeah, definitely do.
So, you know, we can say congratulations.
Yeah, there's respect. You don't have to like, but you can respect. And, you know, that's they got the job done. They won the series fair and square. It's not like anybody cheated or anything. So it's definitely theirs to have. And congratulations. Enjoy it. And go Dodgers.
Right.
I'm kidding. No, right. I'm not.
Wow. Andy's been like 2 weeks on Bob Sirott show. He's a completely different person now.
Look out.
Kind, loving Andy suddenly is like he's got boxing gloves. Or maybe you've just been hanging out with Hamp and OB too much.
Oh, maybe that's what's going on maybe here. Because I missed them this week, so maybe I had to, you know, kind of take on their persona a little bit.
A little backlog something there. Okay. All right, so we're going to take a break. I do have news about our Tree Time show, which we'll get to in a few minutes. We have got, Chwani, we've got the far-flung forecast. Is that correct?
Yes, we do. We sure do. Yes.
All right. We'll get to that coming up in just a moment. The Week in Health with Dr. Santina Wheat. Also, in just a few minutes, we've got a lot coming up this morning. Stick around. 720 WGN. Gentlemen, boys and girls, moms and dads, it's time for America's favorite, the far-flung forecast, our weekly look at things going on all over this great land of ours with the latest, your far-flung forecaster, Dave Schwann.
Well, thank you so much.
Wasn't that nice? That was a nice intro.
That was very nice.
That was that point.
I thought it was fine.
I should be an announcer.
Of course, the rest of the show, you'll be just treating me like you normally do. But
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But at any rate,
nobody loves you more than I do.
Friends,
yes,
get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices. We go out west. We go to Eureka Valley.
Eureka.
California, actually. Eureka Valley goes back to the 1850s when it was just a ranch, a 4,000-acre ranch, and in 1854 was becoming a neighborhood, more or less. But actually, we're kind of fooling you here when we say Eureka Valley, California. It's not a town. It's a neighborhood in San Francisco, and it is the neighborhood in which someone who we lost this week was a very, very special Chicagoan. Sister Jean was born there in 1919 in Eureka Valley, San Francisco.
Aww.
We lost Sister Jean at the age of 106.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And what a great person, you know, for not only supporting Loyola, but Chicago. She had world attention. That was just really, really something special to see.
Just a good person. I mean, all the notoriety I mean, all that's great, and her loyalty, you know, to the basketball team.
Yes.
And, you know, bobbleheads and all the notoriety. Just a wonderful person.
Yeah.
Wonderful
definitely,
person.
Definitely setting an example for everyone.
106 years old.
106. And was born, really, her birthday is the day before mine, August 21st. But she was born a lot earlier than I was. I was not born in 1919, but... she was born at Eureka Valley in San Francisco, where we have clear skies and 57 degrees today, going up to a high of 67.
How about if we're still here doing this show when we're
106? You think so?
Hey, time for the far-flung force. Here's, what's his name? I can't remember
what?
His name.
What?
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 I think that's fine. Back after this with the Weekend Health next on WGN. Time for the Weekend Health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Joining us, as always, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw, Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Northwestern Medicine, Delner Hospital. Dr. Wheat, good morning. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. So we have got, you know, thousands of people out in the streets of Chicago this morning doing the marathon. Hopefully everybody is trained properly and taking the proper precautions before it all started, which we're now a couple of hours into it. But when someone is about to undertake such a massive physical challenge, what are the kinds of things that they should do ahead of time? I don't mean, you know, obviously people are running the marathon right now. I don't mean them, but like any of us who are taking on, you know, big physical challenges, what are the precautions that we should take?
Absolutely. You already mentioned one of them, which is just training. You want to make sure that you have built your body up to be ready for whatever the challenge might be. And that usually is over a period of time of weeks. It's not something that you can decide today that I'm going to do a huge challenge tomorrow, unless you are constantly maintaining that strength and fitness to do whatever the activity is. Also, though, really important are some of the basic things of keeping us healthy, of having good hydration. We want to make sure that we are well hydrated, not just with water, sometimes with electrolytes before we're taking on a big challenge, during and after that challenge. And then also making sure that we're eating things, making sure we have plenty of protein, plenty of carbohydrates, so that our body has the fuel to tackle those challenges. And then sleep, both before and after.
Oh, I've always heard, you know, people getting ready to run a marathon or some big physical challenges to carb load. Is there anything mm-hmm. to that? I mean, I you know... used to know people who would run the marathon, and they're like, oh, I got to have a big plate of pasta tonight before I run the marathon. Is there anything to that?
There is actually great benefit to having carbohydrates before doing something like a marathon. You also want to be careful, because if it's too heavy on your stomach, then it makes it hard to do the challenge. But carbohydrates before and after provide our body with the fuel to get those things done.
So if I have some pasta today, I can say it's because I ran the marathon, right?
Might as well.
Yeah, might as well. So what about people when they get done with this whole thing today? Mm-hmm. Do they, you said, you know, go with carbs coming out of this. Do you eat? Do you not eat? What are the things that the runners should be doing today after they finish these 26 point whatever it is miles?
Right. So carbohydrates are good to help replace the fuel, and then also to have protein also to help repair the muscles. So it is important to have to eat. You generally are going to feel hungry after something like a marathon. So some people feel like they're not hungry right away. It's still important to get those calories in and to help replace. And the biggest thing I worry about after a race like today is hydration, particularly as it's not the coldest out today. So we want to make sure that people are staying hydrated, and not, this is one of those times that it's not just water, it's water plus electrolytes and other things also. So that is all important. And then it's easy to want to go and just like sit on the couch and do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Now you're talking. Now you're talking my game. Now you're talking.
But that's actually not great for our runners. It is okay for them to rest, but then we want them to keep moving because if they just sit down after all of that activity, it is not actually great for their muscles.
I was going to ask you about the physical stress that something like this puts on you. You know, you're exercising these muscles, doing the run, for example. Do you do exercises after you're done? Stretching, or is it just simply a matter of keep moving for a certain amount of time afterwards?
So stretching after the marathon can be good, though really it is about movement. And just as marathon runners have to do a down taper generally right before the race, it's recommended that as they get back into their regular exercise, they do an up taper again, that they give their body time to recover. And also consider doing exercises that are a little bit different than the running because their body needs to do some cross training as well to recover.
Okay, like for example, what would that be?
Recommendations often are to start with like low impact things like walking or riding a bicycle without a lot of resistance to it. And then re-engaging with things like strength training or rowing, doing other things that allow the body to stay active, but don't put the exact same stresses.
Yeah, because I've seen, we used to do our show in a studio that was right on Michigan Avenue, and we would mm-hmm. see people after they've completed the run just looking so depleted. I was worried about them, having gone through this heroic amount of physical challenge and then just looking so wiped out afterwards. So, I hope people take some of your advice on that.
And it's interesting, too. It can be not just the physical pieces, but sort of the letdown. It is great to finish a marathon, but there's also sort of, and now it's over. I've been training for this thing for weeks and weeks and weeks, and now it's over. So there's a piece of that that's involved too.
Oh, the mental aspect of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, very interesting. Okay. Well, there you go for, future runners, runners maybe listening to us while they're doing, their marathon run this morning, a few helpful tips. For those participating in that, I wanted to talk a little bit about Mental Health Day, which is today, and the kinds of things that people should be looking out for, kind of precautions, things that people can do to help themselves mentally today. Dr. Santina Wheat with us from Northwestern Medicine. We will be back right after this. Dr. Santina Wheat from Northwestern, Delnor Hospital, on with us, The Week in Health on WGN, 312-981-7200 is our telephone number. If you've got calls or texts that you would like to send in for Dr. Wheat, we would love to hear from you as always. In the meantime, though, Dr. Wheat, Mental Health Day actually was last Friday. And tell us a little bit about that. How prevalent a problem is this, and what are some of the things that people can do to relieve some of that mental health stress?
Yeah, in addition to the World Mental Health Day being on Friday, the U.S. celebrates Mental Health Week to raise awareness the first full week of October, so that was last week as well. And it unfortunately seems to be something that is on the rise. We see more people that are suffering from anxiety and depression over the years, and it is so many different things. It can be not just the anxiety and depression. There's also bipolar disorder. There's also some of the things that go along with ADHD and ADD. There's lots of challenges that people face that fall into the world that impact their mental health. And so this week is just an opportunity for people to learn a little bit more about how they can seek help, knowing that primary care physicians like me are always available to talk to them about it, to seek care from a therapist. Sometimes from their faith community is where they're able to seek care as well. And there's just so many options that are available. And then I would be remiss if I didn't say that if anybody's ever worried about someone hurting themselves or a friend or a family member or even themselves, that there are suicide hotlines that are available out there that you could always reach out to for help.
Yeah, so many resources, people glad to help with something like that. I'm wondering how much mental health issues translate over into physical ailments. You know, people going through anxiety, through stress, et cetera, that manifest themselves physically in other ways on your health. Is that the case?
Thank you for asking that. That is absolutely the case. And that can manifest in so many different ways. For some people, it's headaches. For some people, it's aches. I personally get the aches in my shoulders and my neck when stress is increasing or when I'm feeling worse. Some people get it in their stomachs, and they actually will feel stomach pains and also have like diarrhea that goes along with it as well. These are real, true physical pains that can be impacted by stress, anxiety, depression, and it is something that has to be considered whenever those pains come up if they're not going away easily.
I mean, you know, talking to a professional, you know, to really get to the core of the problem, the stress, the anxiety, is always great. But are there things that people can do just on their own? Exercise? Somebody told me that breathing, that certain breathing exercises can help tremendously with anxiety. Is that true?
That is absolutely true. So exercise absolutely is one that can help people cope with their stress and can decrease the impacts of things like anxiety or depression. Sunlight is one of those things. Getting outside and going for a walk and having sunlight is one of them. And then absolutely breathing, particularly for people that are experiencing anxiety. The breathing just sort of allows you to refocus and center yourself and can help you manage through that anxiety. And there's different types of breathing. Some people do counted breathing. Some people do box breathing. There's not necessarily one that's much better than others. It's more about the intentionality of slowing everything down.
What is box, box breathing?
BOX breathing, yeah. Box breathing is when you essentially picture a box. And if you think about drawing a line as you're breathing in as like the top of the box, and then as you were to draw a line down, you hold your breath. And then as you go back the other way, then you let out your breath. And then to hold hold your breath again as you go back up. So basically it's slowing down breathing into four steps.
Okay. All right. And that kind of recenters everything, is what you're saying?
It does. It actually lets the stress hormones in your body sort of calm down and allows you to manage a bit better.
Yeah, I've heard deep breathing. I've heard that as a technique. Very, very deliberate inhaling and exhaling helps. What about diet? Does that make a big difference? I would think as obsessed as we are in the U.S. with fast food and processed food, that can't possibly help anyone's health in general. But I would think with mental health, if you're not eating properly, that could only contribute to the problem.
You are absolutely correct. And so this is part of the reason why I always recommend a healthy and balanced diet with as many fresh fruits and vegetables as possible. We see that when you have things that are full of sugar or that are extra processed, it tends to give you those highs and lows, honestly, in your mood. Like we think about the slump that happens after a sugar high is something we talk about with children, but happens with adults too. And so having a diet that causes you to have all of those ups and downs can really impact your mental health as well.
What about vitamins, taking supplements, multivitamins? Are those, if you're not eating properly, I mean, is that a good substitute?
It's not the best substitute. The fruits and vegetables and the healthy foods are generally the best option. But we do see that there are some people that benefit from some vitamins that can help their moods. It might be the one that I think about the most is vitamin D, particularly like us when we're about to go into the wintertime and have less sunshine. Sometimes having more vitamin D, if you're not getting it in your diet, as many of us do, that is one of the supplementations that I will recommend. But typically, it's more about just making sure that you have moderation and a balance to your day.
Good stuff. Good information, Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw, Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Northwestern Medicine, Delner Hospital. Dr. Weed, I hope you have a great Sunday today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, you too.
We've got news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up next. So I'm not complaining about this warmer weather, but it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a little more seasonal now.
Yeah, but it's going to be, Tim just said it's going to be warm again.
Warm again in the 70s. We'll drop off into the 60s later in the week. But, yeah, still in the 70s. We had some lows in the 40s. As a matter of fact, some reports of frost the other day overnight out in the western suburbs.
That's what I want for Halloween. I want it to be, like, cold. Back in the day when you and I were trick-or-treaters.
Yeah.
And you had to put your winter coat on.
You put your coat on.
Above your costume.
Yep. Over your costume and went out. Yeah. Yep. I remember some perfect fall evenings, though. You know, when out, you didn't really need a jacket if you had a
brisk.
Yeah, yeah. If you had a costume that you know carried some warmth to it, well, you were fine.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was Superman so many years I wouldn't know. I prancing around in long underwear that was dyed blue. Which made my skin turn blue.
I'm picturing you running down the street with your arms out, making the flying noise.
Oh, yeah. Very definitely. But also, you know, a lot of the kids had plastic pumpkins.
You still do it, don't you?
Yes. To gather their candy, they had the little plastic pumpkins, which I always loved that. It's like, why can't we have plastic pumpkins to collect our candy? We had like old A&P shopping bags.
Yeah.
Crummy old A&P shopping bags.
We may have had some A&P. There was an A&P store not far from our house, and then a Jewel, of course. Yep. But that's what we were using. Yeah.
Yeah. Give me my candy. Don't give me any candy corn. Don't give me a handful of candy corn. I want some Baby Ruth bars.
And full size, none of this bite-sized stuff.
That's right, full-size candy bars. Those are the good ones.
Boy, you know, and coming home from school the next day, wasn't that, talk about a treat. You know, you had this huge bag of candy. And
waiting for you.
Waiting for you. Dumped it out on the floor, watching Garfield Goose, eating the candy and ruining your dinner.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, I had three older brothers. So
they got to it before you
did. They would pick through my stash. And, you know, they would take all the good stuff. It's really no question why I turned out the way I did.
No.
With the mental abuse that I went through at their expense, ditching me at the movie theater, stealing my candy.
Stealing your candy at the theater also.
Except that they ditched me. So little Dean sitting there by himself with a box of Milk Duds. I'll be okay. The Tree Time Show is coming up November 2nd, and we were hoping that we would have a return of the Eddie Carosa Polka Band, but unfortunately, they have a previous engagement.
Oh, do they? Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, which I tried to get them to cancel. So they're not going to be with us. There's no polka music this year.
Oh, okay.
Unless we provide
those
it ourselves.
Those were great. Well, we can do that.
Maybe we could learn to play the accordion between now and
How
then.
How about it? How about it?
I could burn off a mean clarinet polka.
Well, you want to give it a try?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't look at me. I can't play it. So.
Well, you'd be surprised when I show up in Lake Barrington with an accordion.
I won't be. That'll be great.
Who Stole the Kishka? I know all the hits.
Do you really?
Yeah.
You used to play them when you played Lady of Spain on the organ there. Right?
Not Lady of Spain, Spanish Eyes.
Oh, Spanish Eyes. I'm sorry.
Spanish Eyes was my favorite with the setting on our Wurlitzer organ that went.
Yeah.
I thought that was high line back then. All right, so right now, plan for the show. We will have entertainment. We will have some local theater productions that are going to be out there. We always have a lot of food. We always have beverages. We always, are providing some things. It's just going to be minus polka music this year. And I was wondering if we should have the Christmas carolers. You know how we always have Christmas carolers?
Yes.
It's November 2nd.
I know. They're probably not ready yet.
It just feels like it's too early to... I mean, I know it's a Christmas tree store, but it just seems early to have Christmas carolers out there.
Well, we can still get them. I mean, it is a Christmas-themed show, you know, holiday-themed show.
I don't know. I don't think we've ever done it this early before, have we?
Not this early. Not this early. Yeah. Well, let's see. The year the Cubs won the World Series, 2016, we were out there the first week of November because it was just after they won.
It was just after they won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just after they won. So, Andy, what might have been the date on that?
That probably would have been, well, they won it on November the 2nd, depending on what time zone you were in.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been the 3rd if you were actually in Cleveland watching that game.
Right, because it was super late, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because it was a 10-inning game, so.
That was a Tuesday night, I think?
Wednesday night.
Wednesday night, yeah. Okay.
Right. So we were probably there the following weekend.
We were there the following weekend, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. November 5th, November 6th, something like that. So,
well, we'll figure it out one way or the other. But Shawnee and I, we are going to do our Me and My Shadow dance routine.
I didn't know about that either. Are they going to let me in?
I don't know. You're the one with the security issues. I don't know what kind of tight security they have out there. We'll see.
You know, it's wonderful to see listeners at the door, sometimes there before we get there.
They're there hours before we get there.
Lined up and ready to go.
Yeah.
So they'll let me in.
Outside.
They'll let me in.
Outside chanting, Shawnee, Shawnee,
they'll let me in.
Shawnee, Shawnee.
I've heard that.
All right. We've beaten this into the ground, and we'll take a break. See, normally if I was back at the station, I could just push the button myself when I want to bail out of this. It's a little trickier now that we're not actually there. And I have to say, we'll be back in just a moment on WGN. Dave Schwann back at his appointed post in the WGN newsroom, though, this morning. So hail, the gang's all here. Somebody on our text line this morning from the 312 area code, Schwanny.
Yeah.
Dean, I'm disappointed that you're at the Bradley Place location. I always wait for you to complain about the closures.
Oh, yeah, right. You don't complain about them anymore because you don't have to deal with them.
Because I don't have to deal with them anymore. But I empathize with what a nightmare it must be downtown, because there's no escaping it. Most of the events that take place downtown are... You know, straight up and down, north or south or east or west. This is all over the place.
So yep.
It's just, it's a madhouse no matter which way you turn. So I'll try to, maybe I can complain about something else to make up for it.
Well, you'll find something, I'm sure.
Yeah. Never a shortage.
You actually do sound in very good spirits this morning.
I am. I am. And whether or not that has to do with not seeing you, I don't know.
Probably.
Yeah. Andy and I had a great chat this morning.
Yes, we did.
Got together. We hung out.
You see, once again,
hanging out the
newsroom.
Andy
and I had a great talk, and you weren't here.
Yeah, we had a Eggs Benedict. We had a huge breakfast. Big breakfast.
And you didn't get to come.
Yeah, and you didn't get any. Yeah. you know what? I'm so sad about the news about the death of Diane Keaton.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a phenomenal actress she was, and what great roles she gave us. Annie Hall, of course, for which she won an Oscar, playing in all three of the Godfather movies. Phenomenal. But, I mean, the list of her film credits just goes on and on and on and on. Something's Gotta Give, Marvin's Room, Father of the Bride, First Wives Club, Book Club, Love and Death, Looking for Mr. Goodbar. Remember that one? Wow.
That goes back.
1977, to be exact.
I was going to say mid-70s, right?
She co-starred in Reds, the movie Reds with Warren Beatty. So many amazing, amazing movies. And I was very lucky to have had the opportunity to interview her on many occasions. Always very, very nice, very cordial, very pleasant to be around. You know, really a lovely experience. And can you think of too many other actresses that have had such a like signature style and look about not only the roles that she took, but in her her own life, the way that she dressed, the way that she carried herself. She was truly, you know, they say too often that people are one in a million. She was truly one in a million. I don't think there will ever be another like Diane Keaton. They have not released any details, right, Juani? I haven't heard any about her death.
Cause of death or anything? No, I haven't seen anything.
But she was...
I was wondering about that, though.
79
years old, yes. Yeah.
So, sad about all that. Remember when we were over at Tribune Tower, or as I like to call it, the old dump?
I was waiting for you to say that.
Right.
It wouldn't be complete without that.
Well, you know, one of the things that I did enjoy broadcasting from the window on Michigan Avenue, in addition to my making funny faces at the kids when they were going by.
To say the least.
Because kids love their Uncle Dean, always entertaining them, whether their parents wanted me to or not.
They didn't.
They enjoyed it. I also enjoyed one Sunday per year. There was an event that took place called Open House Chicago, where you could sign up through the Chicago Architectural Center to tour some of the classic and legendary buildings in Chicago. And one of them was Tribune Tower. Remember, people used to line up outside of the building to come into that magnificent lobby that was there, I guess still is.
Yeah, it is.
You know, people would tour the building, and it was a big deal. That's coming up again. The Open House Chicago Festival is coming up again next weekend, October 18th and 19th. And Adam Rubin is the Senior Director of Public Engagement for the Chicago Architecture Center. Adam, thanks for joining us this morning. Hello.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Dean. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So tell us what's planned for this year. I assume you're going to be, that there will be people all over again getting special looks at some of these historic landmarks around Chicago again, right?
Oh, man, we're all over the place this year. We're in 25 different neighborhoods across the entire city and have over 200 sites for people to explore. It's a big festival.
For example, tell us about you know, some of the highlights of what people can check out.
So some of our new sites this year I'm really excited to talk about. One is the Hilliard Tower Apartments down in Chinatown. You know these because these are these four-port cement kind of nautical-looking buildings that look a little bit like the Corn Cob downtown because they're by the same architect. They're both Bertrand Goldberg buildings. But this is a really cool residential community that was built as public housing and is still being used as senior and family housing today. It's extraordinary. We've also got the Aspire Center in the Austin neighborhood, which is one of those elementary schools that was shuttered about a decade ago, but it's since been transformed into this just amazing state-of-the-art multi-use facility for the community. I'll give you one more. This is a former 7-Eleven that's up in the Uptown neighborhood that's been turned into a chamber music venue called The Checkout.
Really?
It's right by Graceland Cemetery, which is also a site. Yeah, it's
wow.
Great, especially if you're in the neighborhood and you're like, I absolutely recognize this building because it looks like a 7-Eleven. And it was, but now it's a very different entity indeed.
I love that you can get chamber music and a Slurpee all at the same place.
At least spiritually. You can think about that Slurpee
right,
flavor while you're listening to Viola.
Spiritual Slurpee, right, exactly. What about some of the classic buildings downtown, though? And, you know, I think of places like the Auditorium Theater, the Auditorium Building, which is one of the great architectural wonders of the world, really, not just Chicago.
Oh, it's phenomenal. And what's great is that you know, a lot of people have gone to the auditorium theater for a concert because, you know, they have a robust schedule. But we're going to bring people into some other parts of the building that are also designed by Louis Sullivan, like the Gans Hall, which is above the auditorium theater, but it's a much smaller recital room with all those details from the 1890s that you see in the auditorium theater itself, but on a little bit of a smaller scale. So we'll be able to bring folks into there, into a beautiful library that you can access if you're a Roosevelt University student, but generally the public wouldn't get to see it. And that's kind of the magic of open house, is that way to kind of get around and get a behind-the-scenes look at all these different parts of the city.
Yeah, I love that. First of all, that it's like all over the city now. It's not just downtown, but it's, you know, some of the well-known architectural wonders, but like some of these smaller places, like former 7-Eleven, that now is a chamber. Chicago ranks pretty high, I would think, with architectural wonder, doesn't it, compared to other cities?
Oh, well, we're the best architecture city in the world. But also, we're the Open House Festival is something that happens in cities all over.
Mm-mm. Still there, Adam? No, I don't think so. I think our phone line dropped out. It sounds like our phone line dropped out. Oh, boy. I wish we would get this fixed. The 15th annual Open House Chicago Festival. Are you back with us, Adam?
Yeah, I'm back on now.
You're back there. Okay, I'm sorry. Our phone line gets a little squirrely every once in a while. Can people still get tickets to be part of this?
You know, the cool thing about the festival is you don't need a ticket. There's no registration involved. You just show up and go out and explore. And you can go and see one site that's in, you know, down the block from where you live. You can go see 20 sites all across the entire city. It's totally up to you. There's a million ways to do it. But you can just go out and explore. Go check out openhousechicago.org or download the Chicago Architecture Center app, which has all the sites listed there. You can make your own itineraries and lists, and it's going to be a great time.
Oh, that is really great, because I remember, is Tribune Tower, is that still, you know, part of the tour?
You know, Dean, I tried really hard when recruiting the sites, but now that they've gone condo, it's a little bit harder to get into the building.
Yeah.
But maybe one year they'll be willing to bring people up to the top again. I certainly would like to see it.
Yeah, it was people used to stand in line for blocks to get into the building when we used to do our show in the window there. But the ownership has changed, the composition of the building, it's condos and not a newspaper and radio station anymore. The whole thing has changed, but there's still plenty to see and enjoy. It's openhousechicago.org to get more information on the event, which takes place next weekend, October 18th and 19th. Is that all correct, Adam?
Everything is correct. Hope to see you all there.
Sounds great. Adam Rubin, Senior Director, Public Engagement, Chicago Architecture Center, and we will be right back. It is time for the Week in Theater. We've got so many productions going on in the Chicago area. Among the biggest and most popular at the moment, The Lion King, which is back in Chicago and will be here for another week. We've got productions going on at The Goodman and The Steppenwolf, but I want to bring to your attention a couple of shows that might just be perfect for you for the Halloween period that we are in right now. And one of them is called Clued In, Where There's a Will, There's a Way. It is a Agatha Christie-style show at Second City at the Up Comedy Club, just in time for Halloween, with six shows remaining throughout October. And joining us on the phone line right now is Bruce Phillips, who's the executive director of High Stakes Production, the parent company to Clued In. Bruce, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. So tell us a little about Clued In. It sounds like something that's very, very engaging for the audience.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Clued In is a show we've been running at Second City for 9 years now. We've been doing it in their, we were the first in their cabaret spaces that they opened up a number of years ago. And we're normally there Fridays and Saturdays. And this is the second year that we've done a more sort of formal partnership with Second City and co-produced a larger, more extravagant, more exciting kind of version of our show, Clued In. So this is Clued In, Where There's a Will, There's a Way, which focuses on this idea of like family drama, wills and inheritance. We're taking inspiration from things like Glass Onion, Crooked House, you know, Orient Express.
Yeah.
I think there's all these, the idea was that there's all these subgenres in murder mysteries. Like, the real murder mysteries are so big right now. There's so many of those things. Poirot, all the Knives Out mysteries. Last year, we did four performances, four sold-out performances, and we called it An Invitation to Die For. And that was about getting this, like, mysterious invitation to a murder mystery, like Last of Sheila or Clue, the first Knives Out movie, and things like that. So this year, we're looking at family dramas and inheritances.
And correct me if I'm wrong, this is fully improvised. I mean, that's
fully improvised.
I think that's what makes this so interesting, is that every show that you do must be a little bit different, right?
It is. And that's what's been always exciting about for me, what we do with High Stakes Productions. Like, there's a lot of improv shows in Chicago. You know, it's the home of long-form improvisation, and we've been doing narrative genre for a long time. This is a full-length, 90-minute, completely improvised show. We have really high-end tech and costumes and props, and we're doing it the world-famous Second City. But there's no sketch here. There's nothing written. We don't know who the detective is. We don't know who the murderer is. We don't know who the victim is. That's all going to be created on the spot.
And is it the audience that is providing input to you to, you know, kind of form the show as you go along, or how does that whole thing work?
There's elements of it. We're going to ask the audience for a inherited item, something that's going to inspire maybe like the kind of family that we're going to encounter. I was in opening night, and we got a suggestion of a parrot, which is great. And so there was this major inherited parrot that we later determined knew the code to the safe where the fortune was kept. And, the whole family ran a fairly illegal menagerie of different animals. And, you know, we have a vet and the owners that want to take over the zoo and make it something else. So it's all inspired off that one suggestion. And then the audience also helps us pick our detective from a deck of cards we've got with everybody's faces on them.
And tell me a little about your cast of talented performers in this who are performing but also creating the show as you go along.
Yeah, we've got some of the, I mean, every show says best improvisers in Chicago, but I truly believe it. We've got such amazing folks that perform all over the city. You know, we've got folks that are doing, working at Second City ETC and Main Stage, understudying Torco, on Torco, teaching at all these big theaters, Annoyance and IO. And I think the big thing is that so many of, I think our newest people to the company have been with the company 2-3 years. And the people that, that founded this, myself and a bunch of other folks, we've been performing together for over a dozen years.
Wow.
It really shows up in how we relate to each other, how we're just so comfortable, and they're my favorite friends and my favorite people to make stuff with.
Yeah, the audiences, you know, tell me a little about them, because, you know, you're coming to a show like this, you don't know what to expect. You know you're probably, if you're in the audience, you're probably going to be drawn into this. I guess that's part of the fun of coming to a show like this, right? That it's completely unpredictable for everybody involved.
Absolutely, yeah. It is. I think it is rare to see, like you mentioned, it's rare to see a fully improvised show. And I think the audience can feel that. The magic of seeing these connections and these things happen right in front of them. And we've worked really hard to make this very immersive experience. So while you're coming into the theater, we believe the show starts from the lobby. So we've got a special little QR puzzle kind of maze you go through that you can play if you want to, that will win you a prize. There's information on the show, of course, what you're going to see on the company, but also just little fun riddles. One of our head writers for this thing, CJ Tor, for the puzzle section, is a writer at Jackbox Games. So we've got people that kind of perform all over the place and lend their talents to making this something amazing.
Yeah, it's got to be so fun for the performers, I would think. And, you know, for audience members, to me, that's always been part of the fun of going to any kind of improv show. I guess most of my experiences have been at Second City. But for something like this, where, you know, there is somewhat of a theme that you're going through, but it's developed as you're sitting there and going on, really, really fun. Again, it is called Clued In, Where There's a Will, There's a Way, and it's at Second City's Up Comedy Club. How can people get tickets? When is it playing? Give us all the details.
Absolutely. The shows are Thursdays at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 4 p.m. through October. We've got two special dates. We've got a Saturday matinee that's happening on the 25th, which is at 4 p.m., and we're doing a Halloween show. So there's not going to be a Thursday night show that day. There's going to be a Halloween show at 8 p.m., and tickets are at secondcity.com or tinyurl.com/cluedin2025.
Okay, all right. We will get people information if they need it for Clued In, Where There's a Will, There's a Way, going on pre-Halloween over at Second City's Up Comedy Club. Bruce Phillips, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me. We hope to see you there.
Okay, very good. And another sort of perfect for Halloween kind of show but is called Strange Cargo, The Doom of Demeter. And that is also going on. It's actually in previews right now. We'll tell you all about that when we come back next on WGN. We continue with our weekend theater segment. We're looking for some productions for you. Pre-Halloween, we just told you about this completely improvised murder mystery at Second City's Up Comedy Theater. Wanted to also tell you about one which is in previews right now and actually will be running past Halloween until November 23rd, called Strange Cargo, The Doom of the Demeter, which is a piece inspired by the seventh chapter of Bram Stoker's Dracula. The playwright for Doom of the Demeter is Timothy Griffin, and he joins us on our phone line right now. Timothy, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, really nice to have you here. I'm a big fan of Bram Stoker's Dracula, and I like little offshoots of it like this. This is, instead of me summarizing it, let me just ask you, what is it that people will see when they come for Strange Cargo, The Doom of the Demeter?
The Doom of the Demeter is based on Chapter 7 of Dracula, as you said, and during Chapter 7, it's when the cargo ship Demeter travels from Transylvania to England, carrying Count Dracula's belongings. And by the time the ship reaches England, the entire crew has disappeared, except for the captain, who is dead at the wheel. So now I've given away the story. But in the book, it's done simply by excerpts from the captain's log and a couple of newspaper articles. So the details of what happened are very hazy and very vague.
Yeah.
And that provided me with the opportunity to come up with a story of what happened on the boat.
Yeah, and I mean, this really is sort of like a perfect pre-Halloween kind of production to see, isn't it?
Absolutely. Where I've always been a big fan of horror theater. I remember when I was a kid, I saw The Hobbit at the late lamented Mill Run Playhouse.
Oh, wow!
In the round, and I remember there were a couple of sequences, the Spiders of Mirkwood and Murder in the Dark with Gollum were just terrifying to me as a child, and I thought, boy, this is so cool to see this right in front of me. So I've always been a big fan of horror theater, and I'm really thrilled at the opportunity to bring it to the stage.
Yeah, this is going to be, or it is now in previews, at the City Lit Theater, which is 1020 West Bryn Mawr in Chicago. Tell us a little about staging this production and, you know, the cast and what it is that you're putting up on stage. Or I guess I should say the director, Ed Rutherford, is putting up on stage, but putting your production up on the stage like this.
Well, Ed Rutherford's Black Button Eyes Productions has long been a group that puts together some really remarkable stage work. It's always got a very unique visual style to it, and a very dark and vaguely sinister attitude to it. I believe they premiered with an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's Coraline on stage several years ago. And so we've tried to create an atmosphere of dread and fear, and we hope that while the audience will pay for the entire seat, they'll only be using the edge of it.
I love that. I love that. Big cast in this show?
It's a cast of 10. There's a crew of 9 crew members on the Demeter itself, and then a mysterious old man who is accompanying Dracula's belongings joins them on the journey.
Wow, I mean, this is just really sounds intriguing. What about is this something that the whole family could come and see? Is this something, you know, better suited for adults? You mentioned, you know, going to see horror theater as a kid. And, you know, I think stuff like this is, you know, perfectly fine for kids. You know, it depends on the kid. Every kid is different. But you want to get a little scared, don't you, when you go to see a production like this?
Well, sure, especially during the Halloween season. And as far as, you know, is it good for kids? I would say, it like you said, it depends on the kid. I was a big horror fan as a kid. I was watching Twilight Zone when I was 9, and that was sort of a gateway for me. And you know, then I started reading Stephen King. So, if your kid is a horror buff or a budding horror devotee, then absolutely they should come see this.
This really speaks to, I think, the essence of Chicago theater. You know, I'm sure you must have strong feelings about places like City Lit Theater thriving with productions like really solid productions like this that are you know, being presented, that there is a lot in some of these you know, outlying theaters, right?
Absolutely. And I think that I think that a lot of the smaller storefront theaters are really kicking the door open and breaking ground on a lot of inventive stuff that larger theaters, especially, you know, commercial entities, might be a little leery of risking. But City Lit in particular has been around for 45 years, and they consistently put out remarkable material. Earlier this year, they did a production of August Wilson's 7 Guitars, which garnered them several Jeff Award nominations and Jeff Awards themselves. And one of the actors from 7 Guitars, who won a Jeff Award last year, we're lucky enough to have in our play as well.
That's fantastic. This really sounds like a great one to go check out sometime between now and November 23rd. City Lit Theater, 1020 West Bryn Mawr Avenue in Chicago. Strange Cargo, The Doom of the Demeter. Are you working on something now that we can expect to see on stage sometime soon?
Well, as I am a really big Dracula fan and a really big horror theater fan, I have 2 more plays that I'm working on right now in development that are based on Dracula. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for those.
Good deal. Well, keep us posted so we can make sure we tell everybody about it. Timothy Griffin, the playwright, Strange Cargo, The Doom of the Demeter, playing through November 23rd at City Lit. Thank you very much, Timothy. Have a great day today.
Thanks so much. You too.
And we will get to the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up next. A-list interviews for today in a second. We've got the stars of the brand new number one movie in America coming up in a second. But some of the stars out on the streets of Chicago this morning, Shawna, you mentioned Jacob Kiplimo?
Kiplimo or Kiplimo, yeah, K-I-P-L-I-M-O.
He won the men's
division
for the marathon today. 2 hours, 2 minutes, 23 seconds.
Yeah, 20. I've got 21, but two seconds.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's a couple of seconds among friends?
Yeah.
Let's just say it this way. The guy ran 26 miles
in a little over 2 hours.
In just about 2 hours.
That's sometimes amazing. You can't drive that fast in the city.
Right? Yeah, with construction, that's fast compared. This Mr. Kiplimo is from Uganda.
And right.
I think you said this is only his second marathon.
It's only his second marathon, and he won one previously. You know, prior to entering in this year's event here in Chicago. But, you know, talking about someone who just really ran, no pun intended, to the top, that's exactly what he did.
Couldn't be a more beautiful morning for this. And I would think kind of a perfect morning for it. Not too hot, not too cold, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's 60 now at the lakefront. And the runners really now are up, way up on the north side, over on, you know, Rogers Park, Sheridan Road area, coming back down through the western end of the city and then south down to around 35th Street. The finish line is at Michigan Avenue and Roosevelt, that area there.
And a guy by the name of Connor Mance.
Right.
He actually finished fourth in the marathon today, but with the fastest time ever run by an American.
Correct.
You know, we always say that, you know, Kenyans always wins.
Like Kenyans, Ethiopians.
Yeah. Today we've got somebody from Uganda winning. That's a pretty good accomplishment for Connor Mance, fastest time ever run by a man in the marathon. Let me see if I can find, is it...
2 hours, 4 minutes, and 43 seconds, and that beats his time in the Boston Marathon this year of 2:05:08.
How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, this course seems to net a lot of records. The people that run it say they really enjoy it. I mean, it's obviously fairly flat since the city is fairly flat, which is nice. And you pointed out the weather today it's just perfect. It's ideal for marathon running.
I'm just looking at some video of this. The streets are perfect. How come when I cross the street, there's potholes all over, and I fall into the potholes? I was missing for like 2 weeks once when I fell into a pothole.
Boy, I'll tell you, you know, in the summer, just before the NASCAR races that we've had in the past few years, those streets are in pristine shape. It's a pleasure to drive through, you know, Columbus Drive and Michigan because, you know, they've got to repave them, make sure they're in great shape for the cars.
Yeah.
One other winner here in the women's division, Hawi Fesa, H-A-W-I, Hawi and Fesa, the last name, F-E-Y-S-A, from Ethiopia, finishing in 2 hours, 14 minutes, 56 seconds.
Remember what Bob Collins always used to say, that there's no way he would run 26 miles unless somebody was chasing him.
Right.
Uncle Bobby.
He had a way.
Still bringing the laughs.
That's true. It's a very good point.
Yeah, exactly. I would only run this fast if Portillo's was having a sale on chocolate cake.
Oh, okay.
Then
running toward the cake.
Then I would put on a sprint to get to that chocolate cake. Congratulations to all of the winners and everybody. I guess like the bulk of the people are still out in the middle of the course. What did you say? Mostly on the north side?
North
right
side now, yes. And then, you know, they make their way back through downtown, I think LaSalle Street, and then west. On Adams, out to Damon, and then they cut down south on Damon to Jackson, back over to Halstead, and south around Taylor Street, all the way to the south side to 35th Street, and then back up Michigan Avenue, where they finish at the south end of Grant Park.
All right. I'm exhausted just hearing you say
that. I know.
Right back right after this. Stick around. Bandy, what do we have on the lineup for today?
Well, today we have Dallas and Carolina. That's the first game. That'll be followed by Tennessee and Las Vegas.
Very good. Look forward to that. And that means we'll be going off a little early today at 11:30. I wanted to get to our A-list interviews for today. And the stars of the new number one movie in America. And that is the new Tron movie that has just come out. Tron Ares stars Jared Leto and Gillian Anderson. Lots of big names in the movie. This is a kind of a flip-flop of the original Tron movie with Jeff Bridges from 1982, where humans went into the digital world in the original movie. In this one, digital characters come out of the digital world and are unleashed on mankind for evil purposes. I won't tell you much more about the plot than that. I like this movie. I really enjoyed the special effects, the visuals of it all. But what I like most about this movie is its message about what AI, artificial intelligence, could be leading to. You know, more and more things in our life are being taken over by AI right now, and this movie shows an extreme of all of that. I enjoyed that message, and was one of the things that we discussed when I talked with the director of the movie, Joachim Ronning, and its star, Academy Award winner Jared Leto.
Absolutely. When I went to see the first film when I was 12 years old, it was when computers and video games were exploding. You know, it was all the rage. And I think what's fascinating about this film is the technology conversation that's happening is exactly what's being discussed in the film. So there's a lot to talk about. And I hope people go see the movie and then they have a conversation about it. So because it is really timely. Yeah.
Yeah. Joachim, what is the attraction to this whole Tron legacy now after 40 years?
Well, I think, for me, what it is that it's world building, you know, and I think in many ways the first Tron in early 80s and even Kosinski's Tron, like they're in many ways they are cinematic masterpieces. And they set the bar incredibly high, and I put the pressure on myself, on everybody else, to like, how can we take it to the next level? And obviously, I think one of the fresh takes that drew me in very early and made me want to really do this is the concept of these digital assets coming into the real world.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, like, because of the AI of it all and all of that. Like, when we were, we started this over 3 years ago. I mean, you've been on it for longer than that, even. And it's been a moving target. You know, the AI kind of exploded while we were in the middle of production. Yeah. And suddenly became everyday tool for everyone. So it's just interesting to see how it's, like, catching up.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's fascinating how this went from science fiction to reality.
No, and that's why the movie, in that sense, for me at least, it's not about AI per se. I think for me it's more about, you know, Ares' journey and what it what it means and takes to be human.
Yeah, there's a lot. And it's beautiful. Visually, it's stunning. Working with all the effects, the music, Nine Inch Nails blew my mind in this and really adds a lot to the movie. And I loved your obsession with 80s music, your character's obsession with 80s music and Depeche Mode. How much of that is really you?
I love Depeche Mode. Yeah.
I mean, are you a child of the 80s? I mean, that must be the music you grew up with.
Yeah, Depeche Mode, The Cure, I mean, that whole era, I love those bands, and I still love them. They're still making great music to this day. So it was fun to have them referenced in the film. And, you know, interesting to see a character start to have, you know, some attraction to human things and appreciate humanity. And then I've always loved Nine Inch Nails. So, you know, getting Yoakam to do the movie, getting Nine Inch Nails to do the film, and then the incredible team that we had that put this movie together with Yoakam is just, it's really, really exciting. And I hope that audiences get a chance to come and enjoy the spectacle that they created.
What was it like when you got to do the scene with Jeff Bridges?
Oh, you know, bucket list.
You looked like you might have been giddy.
I was giddy for sure, and I still am. Every time I get to spend time with Jeff, it's a beautiful thing. I feel really lucky to have worked with him. We both, you know, I think feel that we were. It's hard to think of a Tron movie without Jeff Bridges. And when he walks on the set, it's like the Pope, Elvis is, you know, in the building.
Yeah. you hear that otherworldly music playing.
I mean, he's just incredible. He's everything you think he is. He's a really good person. And I just really love spending time with him. So it was a beautiful thing.
Yeah, there you go. Jared Leto, Oscar winner Jared Leto with director Yoakam Ronning. Their new movie is Tron Ares. It's in theaters now. I gave it a Dean's List A. I got to say, I was completely engaged in this movie. Now, if you want to hear my full interviews with the rest of the cast, we have got those in this week's edition of my new WGN Plus show, which is called The Buzz Behind the Scenes, where we take you inside some of the stories that we talk about each week on WGN TV Morning News and on Bob Surratt's show, where we have a little more time to let some of these stories breathe. So if you're interested in that, you can check out The Buzz Behind the Scenes on our free WGN TV Plus app through Roku, Amazon, Fire TV, Apple TV, and Samsung Smart TV, so it's everywhere. Not only interviews with the cast, but also an amazing performance from Nine Inch Nails, who performed live at the movie's world premiere. So some good stuff for you there. Let's take a quick break, and we'll get ready to wrap things up here next on WGN. All right, and that is going to wind it up for us today. We're off a little bit early to make room for NFL football that's coming up in a couple of minutes. Wanted to remind you about some things that we've got coming up next week on our WGN TV Morning News and also on my segment that I do with Bob Surratt every weekday morning between 8 and 8:30 in the morning. We've got some pretty special A-listers, including a fantastic conversation that we had with the great Allison Janney and Bradley Whitford. Both of them, West Wing veterans, now part of a new legal drama. It's called The Diplomat. Season 3 of that is about to begin. And we sat down and talked with both of them and just had the best time. Fantastic conversation. So that'll be coming up this week, both on TV and will also feature on my segment that we do with Bob here on WGN Radio. And then later in the week, we're going to be talking with two of my favorites, William H. Macy, who's got a brand new movie that is out that is a true story about a young man who is caught in a fire and is incredibly badly burnt, and how this young man dealt with recovery after this terrible accident. William H. Macy stars in the movie, as does John Corbett, who you know from My Big Fat Greek Wedding and also Sex in the City. It is a very inspiring movie that's called Soul on Fire, which is in theaters now, by the way. So you can see that movie now. But those are among some of the A-listers that we're going to be talking to coming up a little later in the week. We'll feature those for you. Also, I wanted to mention that we're going to be talking with Aziz Ansari. That is going to be coming up later in the week. Aziz Ansari is starring in a movie right now with Seth Rogen that is coming that's called Good Fortune. We'll talk about the movie, but also, interestingly, Aziz Ansari is one of the comedians that recently appeared at the Riyadh Comedy Festival in Saudi Arabia, for which there has been a lot of controversy. So we'll also chat with him about that. So we've got some pretty great stuff coming up for you. That and also going to be doing some cooking on Wednesday. We've got a lot of good stuff coming up for you both here on WGN Radio